and welcome to Blogosphere, Serious Influence, the podcast all about the business side of the influencer industry. I'm Alice Audley, and I'm the founder of Blogosphere. We run events, a magazine, an influencer network, and now a podcast too, which I'll be presenting. If there are any questions about the influencer industry that you want answered, please do drop me an email at alice@blogospheremagazine.com. We're delighted to announce that Series 3 of Serious Influence has an exclusive sponsor, the music licensing platform, Licked. Licked provide commercial music from real labels for licensing into creators' content. It means that you can have great music on your videos without the fear of copyright claims or losing ad revenue. If you want to learn more about how you can legally use the music you love, be sure to check out Licked's website, licked.co. That's L-I-C-K-D.co. Today on Blogosphere Serious Influence, I'm joined by influencer Lewis Ball, known online as Looking for Lewis. Lewis joined YouTube as a child and has had numerous iterations of his channel. Known for his makeup tutorials and great sense of humour, his first ever brand campaign was working with Rimmel.
I'm Lewis Ball, Looking for Lewis. Other names go about the internet, I don't really know. I'm 20, I'm from London, and I'm a YouTuber, do Instagram, and I also present a bit too. On CBBC, yeah.
So take me back to the beginning and kind of your background, because you found social media, you're Gen Z. So what was the first social platform that you joined and...
Well, I was always on just social media when I was really young. Like, if you remember Bebo, I was on Bebo when I was like 6 years old. Like, because I had an older brother. So, not that he'd create it, but I would sort of like harass him until like he gave in and made me an account. And I was just always on there. I was like giving out the hearts, like left, right, and center.
What was your happiest when on Bebo? It's happiest when scared of.
Yeah, the dot dot dots. Yeah. And there was also, what was your favorite like body part? And I always said my eyelashes.
Sign of the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, at that age, I was like, people would always used to be like, you have such long eyelashes. So I was like, I'm just going to go with this. I was like, eyelashes. And then I found YouTube when I was 9 years old. And I had my YouTube account, which was called Totally HSM Fan. HSM was standing for High School Musical. And Totally was spelled T-O-T-L-Y. So it was actually Totally. And then, yeah, I just sort of have just been on social media ever since then.
So you kind of actually joined YouTube illegally.
Yeah. Moving on. And then I think I was about 13, 14 when I like found vloggers, like people like Zoella and Tanya Burr and stuff like that. And then that's sort of when I looked at YouTube as a vlogging space. Because before that, I put like videos of me singing Hannah Montana up on like those flip cameras. So when I found out that people like did it to talk about their favorite products and vlog their life, and it wasn't just like a site for random videos, I like was even more in love with it. I've got the worst patience in the world. I can't even wait for anything. Like, even when it takes like 20 minutes on Deliveroo, I'm like pulling out my hair. I literally found it. And then like a week later, I was like, I want to do this, and just started. So sort of spiraled out of control. And now I am here.
When did you first start like experimenting with makeup?
So when I first came onto YouTube doing vlogs and stuff, I was watching beauty gurus, but I'd never seen like a guy in makeup before. So I didn't really, I guess, think it was allowed and stuff like that. So I would do stuff like my top favorite shower gels and body lotions and like really random stuff. And I had no idea what I was talking about. And then I think when I was 15, this guy came into my recommended and it was like natural everyday makeup routine. And I was like, hold the phone. I was like, do the press know about this? I was like, is this like worldwide information? And I was just really shocked. And as I said, I have the worst patience ever. So the next day I was like, I'm going to Boots. It was like an episode of Supermarket Sweep. I wanted to get in and out before anyone from my local area saw me. I wasn't looking at shades. I was literally just throwing things into the basket. By the next week, I'd uploaded my first video. And it was horrible, horrific. It looked like an Oompa Loompa. My eyebrows looked like slugs, like from the floor had crawled up onto my face. I mean, the comments were still really nice. Everybody was still like, wow, you look amazing. And I was like, I know, like with orange foundation staring at my screen.
So although you're 20, you're actually kind of an old school vlogger. You've been around for quite a while. Yeah. So when did you first realize that it could actually become a business? Did you reach out to a brand or were you approached? What was that like?
So I don't really know. I mean, I guess when I was like 15, 16, I still had like around about like 3,000 subscribers, but you know, I was seeing other YouTubers doing it as like a full-time job. So I knew at that age that like it could be a full-time job, but it wasn't for me at that age. So I guess maybe when I was like 17, I think, is when my management like reached out to me. Back then I was like, what the hell? I was like, had maybe like 50,000 subscribers and with Gleam, who has people like Zoella and stuff. And I was like, why the hell do they want someone who can't like match their foundation, like some like little teenage boy with like an eyelash falling off? But I was so excited. And I guess sort of when they reached out, because I never really saw it, even at that age, as like a job. Like I was always like, oh, I'll go to uni and then I'll just sort of like see where it goes. But then I guess when they reached out, I was like, okay, maybe it, like if they see that it could be something, then maybe it could be something.
Did your contemporaries at the time, like at school, sort of understand what you were doing, or did you have any?
No.
And what was that like? Was there backlash? Did they find your channel?
I've gone through like numerous online identities and usernames and stuff, and they found one, and I literally just like deleted the entire thing. I had like 10 videos, and as soon as someone from school found it, I deleted the whole entire thing.
Were they being negative with it?
Do you know what? It wasn't even so much negative. It was just sort of like a, what the hell? Because it was around about 2014, 2015, and YouTube wasn't really still that big of a thing. So a lot of people at school didn't really know what YouTube was, and they were like, well, why the hell are you showing like people your favorite like shower gels? That's just the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. And it was more me being embarrassed rather than people being mean. So I just deleted it all and then started again. And this time I made sure I left out my surname. So it was just Looking for Lewis. So I was like, that way maybe I could go like a longer time without anyone finding me round two. And then I think when I started to wear makeup, people were a bit more like, okay, this is weird now. I was like, it's gone from being weird to being just like wrong in like their eyes.
How did you cope with that?
You know, it never really got that bad because it was never really anything to my face. It was just like, people would like mutter comments if I walked past them or stuff like that. So it never really affected me that bad.
Were you wearing makeup at school as well?
No, I never really wore it at school. I just sort of wore it online because I guess I didn't really have the confidence, but also I knew that online was like a safe space where I could wear it and like the comments would be nice, even if I had like eyeshadow like around my lips. There would still be people being like, you look amazing. So that was like safe space. I mean, I was quite an annoying kid anyways. I was always loud and really annoying. So I'd always had comments from like when I was like 6 or 7. So I'd built up quite a thick skin anyway. So it didn't really affect me too much, quite luckily. And it never really got too bad, but...
How did you balance it with studying at that time? I know obviously you're balancing it now with university, but at school, like making and learning how to make these videos, what was that process like?
It was okay. I mean, back then it was like my number one hobby and passion and it was all I wanted to do. So all my free time I would just like put into spending making videos because it was like something that I was genuinely interested in, something that I genuinely wanted to do. So I literally would spend all my summer holidays. Like there was a time, I think it was my GCSE summer, I would literally had set up the day. So I'd revise for 5 hours, 10 a.m. to, you know what, I'm not in school anymore. I don't need to do the maths. For 5 hours after 10 a.m. And then I would spend the afternoon filming a video and the evening editing it. And I uploaded it every single day over Easter holidays while doing revising for my GCSEs just because I wanted to do it so badly. So I never really found it that bad because it never felt like a job, but never felt like I had to do it. So it was always like me wanting to do it.
Do you think in some ways, because you were so time short, that actually it made that structure made it easier in the way that when people are starting, it's often on the side of a full-time job. And so it's like, this is my window. I have to do it now, as opposed to having a lot of time to be able to do this. 100%.
And I also think that sort of time pressurement, and pressurement is not a word, I just made that up. I did do English A-level, but I got a C, so we're going to ignore that. The time sort of pressure, I guess questions like whether you actually really, really want to do it. Because for some people like, oh, the idea of YouTube, it sounds like really great and on the base surface, but they don't realize how much like work is actually having to be put into it and having to do it alongside like full-time studying or a full-time job. And having to fit it in, you're going to have to really, really want to do it because you're basically going to have to spend all your free time on it. So it sort of sets apart like people who are genuinely interested in doing it and people who just want to do it because they think it looks easy.
By the time you left school, were you able to financially support yourself solely through social media and realize that that was going to be your job?
I could have, but I don't think I would have been comfortable. And I also don't think I was like mentally mature enough to. I was quite immature. So at the age of 18, obviously, like, doing YouTube is such a lonely job. And back then, I wasn't really, like, popping enough. I wasn't, like, going to events every week. I wasn't doing stuff during my days. So I would have literally been, like, 18 years old, but mentally about 14, like, sitting at home every day and not really seeing people, not really doing that. And every single one of my friends was going off to uni.
I was going to say, is that the impetus to go to university? And what uni are you at and why are you studying?
I'm at Goldsmiths, Southeast London, woo! And I'm studying media and communications. Well, I wasn't crazy about going to uni, but I think my parents and all my friends and my school put a lot, like every single person in my year group was going to university pretty much, or like doing a gap year and going. So I would have been pretty much the only one. And I think my parents were a bit like, because both my brothers, don't ask me, they're so smart. Like my older brother went off to uni. My little brother's doing 5 A levels. So me being like, I want to do YouTube. They were like, no. We're like, we don't think so.
Have they been on the whole though supportive?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. They're so supportive. They were like, don't think so, but from a place of love. They weren't being like, you can't do that. They were genuinely like looking out for me because you need to go to university as like a backup. Because even back then, as I said, I wasn't really making enough to comfortably do it full time. Do you know what I mean? I'm so glad I went though, and I'm so glad the pressure was there, because to begin with, I was a bit like, oh, I don't, like, I just want to do this. But as I said, it's given me time to sort of grow up and get my life together, I guess, because it was in shambles before. And now, like, I'm in third year and I'm ready to like graduate, get out of uni and do it full time now properly.
And your first brand deal, was that pre having management or when you got signed? And what was that deal?
So I think my first brand deal was, it was crazy. It was Rimmel, and it was on a shoot, and it was just after James Charles had been cover boy for Cover Girl Cosmetics, and all of the makeup brands were like, woo, beauty boys, and they asked me if I wanted to be the face for, I think it was maybe 2017 Rimmel.
That was your first campaign?
Yeah, I'd seen like other friends in the industry do brand deals before, and I was like, oh yeah, that sounds fun, maybe it's like 2 minutes feature in a video. And they were like, okay, this is the shoot day, this is this, and I was like, wait, what? I'm like usually just used to like setting up a G7X and hoping for the best with my fingers crossed, and I turn up and there's like makeup people there and hair people there and a full set, and I was like, this is not normal. I was just so confused. But that was my first brand deal, and then I mean, it did set the bar a bit too high, I'm not going to lie. And then there was someone next to people, and I was like, where's the hair and makeup team? I was like, no, I'm joking. That was so crazy. I'm so grateful for that experience. It was so fun.
Do the deals that come through you all come through management? So they decide, do they show you everything? Do you ask to see everything?
Pretty much. Either people will come to them or reach out, build relationships organically, just stuff like that. But pretty much they'll come to me and be like, would you be interested in this? And most of the time they'll like filter out stuff, which, do you know what I mean? If like Peugeot was like, hi, like we want you to be a race car driver for 4 days in Monaco, wherever the hell they do Grand Prix. It's a bit like, not quite me. But most of the time it's like stuff that I am genuinely interested in because they've been able to form relationships with brands which I'm already using and stuff.
What would your advice be to a brand who wants to approach you to do work?
I think the number one issue I found when working with brands for me is a lot of my stuff is, it's just a hot mess. Like there's no real structure to my videos. You go away with like a headache and need to lie down in a dark room. So I think a lot of people come to me and expect that sort of, cause, do you know what I mean? And traditionally in advertisement, it's quite cookie cutter. Everything's clean and pristine. And like, if you think of TV adverts, it's all like glossy and stuff. And like, I'll film something and they'll come back. They'll be like, could you refilm it and like make your bed in the background? And it's just like, I don't feel like they get how it organically fits into who I am and my type of content. And a lot of them will be like, oh, could he like not speak in an accent? Like I'll sometimes just go into like a Scottish accent randomly, or I'll say like a word that is just not, like, it's not the type of word that you would want, I guess, associated in a brand deal, but it's just the way that it organically fits into my videos and stuff. So I think the number one thing that I come across is like that sort of awkwardness of wanting to, you know, obviously like make the brand happy and deliver something that they're happy to have their name to, but at the same time trying to keep it in my sort of like, I guess, lack of a better word, messiness of like style of videos.
Do you have a limit though, say, because I think this often happens within the influencer sphere where you get a campaign brief, you execute it to the best of your ability, and that's what you're being paid for, but then they come back, say they don't want it, so you reshoot it, they don't want it, you reshoot it again. Is that something that is pretty frustrating because you're not being paid 3 times
yeah,
to do it?
That is annoying. And I think definitely when I first started, that happened a lot because I was like, okay, I have to say this. And I would just go off and do it and like not really check it. But now I'm like, time is money, people. I'm reading this proof 5 times through. I'm making sure every checkpoint is on it. And it is annoying, but I guess at the end of the day, I guess it just sort of has to be done. It's just like one of those annoying things which you just have to get over. Like, that's life.
In your tenure in the space, do you think that brands have started to respect influencers' own tone of voice and authenticity more? Or do you think there's still a lot of education that needs to happen there?
I think a lot of brands are doing it so much better, but there's just still like a few brands out there who are just not still really getting that. Because it is still a really new thing, digital influencing and stuff. And obviously, if you turn up to a TV advert, you're just like paying a model who doesn't have a whole backstory to her, and she's just there for that one job. Whereas for me, it's like, if I start talking like a robot, people are going to notice and going to be like, why the hell are you speaking like this? This is not normal. Where is Lewis and where is he hiding?
Speaking of robots, very good segue. Thank you, Lewis. Ooh. We have seen an increase in virtual influencers, CGI influencers like little Michaela. Do you think that this is actually going to become more prominent in the future? Just from my own point of view, you know, can you relate to someone that's not actually real as much, but also brand safety?
Yeah, I think really no. I think it's sort of almost like a novel idea and it's cool on the surface. But for me anyway, usually I follow people because of the relatability, as you said, or like I engage with their personality, or they're just like, I guess, nice people. And I think that's why I guess a lot of people, especially my generation, have gone to watching like YouTube, say maybe over TV, because it's like talking to a friend rather than someone talking at you. And I think the robot and CGI sort of influencers are more, you don't really feel as connected with them. And because it's new, I guess it's sort of like a novel idea right now that people are hopping on, but I don't really see, I guess, longevity of it. Because to me, I follow someone because I actually feel like I have a connection with them and I relate to their content, or I like their style. But I mean, I guess like robots can draw outfits on or whatever they do on like paint or whatever it is. But it's just, I don't think it's got the same sort of like sincerity to it.
I think also a lot of brands think that I'll work with a virtual influencer and then I can absolutely guarantee what it's going to, you know, be like. It will be brand safe. But what they're forgetting is that there's actually a human behind making that robot who's going to be like demanding the fees and will have their own personality that you have to deal with. Mm-hmm. Too.
Yeah.
On the whole, like, we're seeing kind of an increase in budgets into the influencer space. Do you think that that is going like mainly to like macro talent? Do you think that we're seeing more up and coming, like someone that potentially doesn't have the biggest following that wants to make this a career? What are your kind of advice and tips for them?
I guess sort of building relationships, not even just with brands, but with people in general, organically. Like, I know a lot of things have come to me because I've made friends and connected with like other YouTubers or bloggers or Instagram people. And then they might have gone to a job and they might have like mentioned me to a makeup artist or mentioned me to someone they were working with. They were like, oh, have you seen this person or something like that? And then just, I guess, circulation of the name. And I don't think all the time it's so much how many followers you have. And I also think if you have like a niche, I guess, to you, it's a lot easier for a brand to work with you. You have like a unique selling point rather than just like you're the same as everyone else. I think for me, a lot of work, but also like I saw an increase in my following when I showed my personality before. Like before, I'd be like background music, showing the product to the camera. Da, 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 da. As soon as I was like, I'm using this now, like, that's when I guess people started to like me more because it was something different and it made, I guess, me more attractive.
How important do you think relationships are in building relationships, face-to-face meetings, and likewise going on sort of press trips and to events to further your career?
I think it's helped me a lot because I think that a lot of people can be a bit different to how they seem on camera, whether it's a good or bad way. I know people who I've seen on YouTube and I'm like, oh yeah, they've got like really nice style, or oh yeah, they're nice. And then I met them in person and they're hilarious. And I'm like, why don't you show more funny side on camera? And they're like, oh no, I'd never like show my weirdness. And I'm like, but why? I was like, not being funny, I'd probably watch more of your videos if you were like stuck out your tongue every 5 seconds or something. But then there's also people who like seem crazy on camera and then you meet them and they're like so dull or like they're so just rude. So I think being able to, I guess, show who you are in person, I think it's easier to sell yourself in person rather than through the screen. So I think definitely face-to-face is a lot better.
You mentioned that your first brand campaign was with Rimmel, and that was after James Charles did the Cover Girl, Cover Boy. We had a panel earlier about diversity. Have you ever felt that you've been used tokenistically within a campaign, and what are your policies on sort of being approached when they're trying to align you with something?
I don't think I have. I've definitely third party, like, seen other people. I mean, you can really tell when it's so blatantly obvious. But something like that Rimmel thing, I genuinely don't think it was token thing at all. If I had just gone...
I'm not saying that one, but another.
But I can always usually tell in, like, a shoot sort of situation, because if I turn up and I'm like, just one boy there, and everyone else is just like white females, it's like, okay, I'm being there as a token. But 99% of the things I've done, I've turned up and there's been other guys there, there's been a woman of color, there's, do you know what I mean? There's been a diverse range of talent. So it's not so much a token to me. It's like, oh, they're genuinely just being inclusive in this campaign. But when it comes to working, I guess I sort of just look at the brand's history. And if they come to me and they're like, oh, we want you to be in this campaign or work with us, and I'll go through and there's not been a single other guy on the page, and I'll be like, well, why me now?
Is that one of the questions that you ask before taking on, like, a campaign? Who else is on it? And do they often give you visibility on that, or can they hold that back?
Usually there is a bit of, like, visibility. Like, they'll usually, maybe not straight away, but once you've showed, like, you do have a lot of interest, they might send over some names or send over, I guess, the vibe. But usually I will be able to tell just from the brief, because I'll get the overall vibe of it and that sort of thing.
How did you learn to value yourself and, like, what kind of fees you could command? Not talking specific numbers,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, I didn't. My management did.
So is that one of the main things that you have found really beneficial from management?
100%. Because I think I didn't do a brand deal before management, but I did have people contact me. I was always just like, gosh, it's a bit rude if I ask for this. But at the same time, I don't want to, like, undersell myself. And then there's, like, loads of budget which could have been spent. So I do think that's one of the number one things which was beneficial when I signed with my management. Yeah.
What else do they provide that you find useful? And to someone in the audience thinking of getting management, what are the pros or cons? They'll be eyeing me up and be like, oh, what are you asking? Cons?
Organization, for me personally, I mean, obviously, everyone will find different pros, but for me, one of the things which I guess struggle with, but also I'm just so lazy and procrastinate so much, is my organization and having someone to rely on. Like, if I don't reply to an email, like, there will be someone there to do that for me, or telling me what to do at the start of every week, being like, this is what's going on this week. It's so much easier. And also because I'm doing uni at the same time, it takes off a lot of time pressure and that sort of stuff. But then I also have loads of friends who went with the management and then quit because they were like, I'm a very organized person. I know who I am and I know what I can do and what I'm capable of doing. And they were just taking a cut, doing what I can just do by myself at home. So I think it's just, I guess, the sort of person you are and the sort of work ethic you have.
Do you kind of sit down and make a plan for where you want to be in a year and 5 years? And obviously you work with CBBC. Was traditional media something that you wanted to always go into? And what's the differences really, like, social media versus traditional media?
Oh, so much easier, because I just have to turn up for an hour and a half every week and I'm done. And I'm like, see you on the TV on Saturday morning. Whereas at YouTube, I have to edit it and make the thumbnail and everything myself. Luckily, the show I do, I've got a good relationship with the people who work on it. So I'm still able to insert, I guess, my personality and my tone into it. So for me, it's not really that different, but I could definitely see how if someone went into it and a director or a producer came in and they were like, you have to do this, you can't say this, you have to be that and that and that. And especially if you had already built up an audience on YouTube with your personality, it could be like stark difference. But for me, it's been really good. It's been different, but at the same time, really similar, because I guess not so much presenting, but you're talking to a camera as I have been since I was like 9 years old. So it was something which I was able to sort of get into, I guess, the mindset of it and the skills of it quite quickly. But it's been so good and I'm so blessed for the opportunity, yeah.
If you could be on any TV show or any Netflix series, what character would you be and which would it be?
Ooh.
Which is so about the business side of the influencer industry. Curveball.
I don't know. Do you know what? This is on my bucket list. I really want to be an extra in a soap. I just want to be in the background, like, you know, when they have the coffee and they're like... And there's like a drama going on. It's like, Stacey, I can't believe you did this. And I'm in the background with my coffee like,
Do you think that you'd be able to do that without taking the attention away from the main characters?
I did turn up to something once, and I was literally just in the background of it. And the makeup artist, I came just full face, and the makeup artist was like, let me just check something. And she brought the director over, and the director was like, it's fine. And she was like, okay. And then he left, and I was like, what was that? And the makeup artist was like, I was just checking your eyelashes weren't too much, and you weren't going to be too distracting in the background.
Okay. We've segued. Let's go back to influencer industry. What are your biggest frustrations about the influencer marketplace now?
I think there are still quite a few Is that word preperceptions, or is it just
preconceptions?
Preconceptions. There we go. Of influencers just as a whole, I think a lot of people.
And what do you think though? Yeah, what do you think they are?
I think a lot of traditional media outlets, I think they're starting to work with them more, but they still view YouTubers and stuff as almost below them and look down on it. And I think that's starting to change, and I think it will very quickly change within the next few years with like people being on Strictly and loads more YouTubers getting into presenting and stuff.
How important do you think that Strictly actually was? Because we had sort of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, that didn't go so well. But then we had Strictly, we had Joe, that was the first transition into mainstream media where it was like, actually, here's a nice guy that's not just the perception of someone that sits in their bedroom, doesn't do very much and makes loads of money, which having worked in traditional media before setting up Blogosphere, I can tell you was the editorial line and actually still is very boring.
I think it was really important, and I think it almost came at the perfect time, because I think this time last year was when just YouTube had been cemented into, I guess, society, especially in the UK, as like a known thing. And it was sort of to just become like an accepted thing around about like this time last year. So I think the time that Joe did Strictly was like perfect. And I think it really has helped a lot. Yeah, definitely.
If you could work with one brand, what brand would you want to work with? And what is your sort of ideal campaign? Does it sit on YouTube? Is it kind of cross-platform? Are there different rates for YouTube versus Instagram? And I'm asking loads of questions in one now, but if a brand is coming and you do a first, they want to trial something with you, is that like, let's suggest doing something on Instagram stories, see if my audience there resonates with it? Like, what's that process like?
For me, I guess it's like the fee sort of relates to how much effort goes into it. So for example, taking an Instagram picture requires less effort than creating an entire YouTube video, or taking stories requires less effort than the picture. So it just depends on that sense of how much effort goes into it. I think usually it is Instagram stories where you like dip your toe in to see if people are interested in, or maybe sometimes like a little integration in a video or something like that. In terms of what my perfect idea would be, I guess it would just be to have full creative control, because a lot of the brands that I do work with do let me take like control, but just to actually be able to come to them and be like, rather it almost be the other way around, where a brand would come to me and be like, we have this new product and we want you to do something about it, what could you do for it? And me to come back and be like, oh, I know this type of video does really well on my Instagram, and it would work so well at just being in there. And they would be like, yeah, cool, do it, something like that.
Do you think that you'd ever create your own makeup line? Is that something that you'd like to pursue in future?
Definitely, 100%. But at the same time, I have like 101 plus two things going on in my head. And I have so many like plans and ideas which start and then write down. And then like 5 days later, I'll think of something new. Even a makeup line or collabing with like a makeup brand to create like a specific product, something, just something like that. I would love to, I guess, almost have like a physical, not proof, but like physical thing which I can hold and be like, wow, I created this and I've been able to do this just from posting my life online.
Within the makeup community, obviously this year we saw the James Charles, Tati Westbrook fallout. Do you think that the American YouTube makeup drama is something, and the way that UK influence will go, or do you think that that's just a different personality type?
Well, I would like to hope not, because Jesus Christ, that would take years off my life. I also think it's a lot more, like the times where I've been out to LA and I've met YouTubers out there, I am like, whoa, you are completely different. They are so much more like money driven, but I guess almost just like fame driven. I think in their mind, it's like the more outrageous they are, the more their career is going to succeed. So that whole drama thing, it propelled pretty much all of them into like more being in people's mouths and stuff, not literally. And I think the people that I've met in the UK industry are just so much more like, they're genuinely interested in what they're doing, and they genuinely just having fun doing it.
Have you ever felt like when you went over to LA and were hanging out with these other YouTubers, have you ever felt imposter syndrome? And for anyone that has felt imposter syndrome, what would your tips for that be?
What is imposter syndrome?
Feeling like you don't belong or that you don't deserve the success that you're achieving at potentially what age you're at, or just coming to an event like this, feeling like all the talks are too much, you know, something like that.
I mean, there's definitely been like some situations I've been in where I'm a bit like, why am I here? Like, or there's definitely events where I've turned up and I don't know anyone there. And there's people who I guess have a lot more following than me. Because it's so easy to just like fall into it and start comparing yourself just on something which is so surface level, like followers. Because as soon as you look on someone's profile, that's usually the first thing that you spot. And it's like, wow, all these people here have so many more followers than me. Like, why am I here? But I think I have been able to take two steps back.
Have you ever suffered with comparison then, like going on? And what are your techniques? Do you sort of, do you curate who you're following? Like, I was speaking to somebody the other day and they follow a lot of people, but they actually mute most of them because it's like, I don't need that to see that in my life right now.
I fall into comparison a lot. And especially when it's people who do similar stuff to me, like if someone posts a funny Instagram video, sometimes I can have like a split second where I'm like, oh, why didn't I think of that? Or like, oh my God, they're so much more funnier than me. Oh my God, they're so much more like talented at makeup than me. But I think, as I said, like taking two steps back and being like, all these other people are interested in me and all these other people comment on my stuff and like are actually interested, that I don't have to be the first person to make a video on something or be the first person to wear a specific lipstick before everyone else or review something before everyone else. And I think it's come with time a lot as well and finding, as I said, my niche. Before I was more of myself online, I would compare myself a lot more and I would try and copy other people because I'd be like, look how much success they're having doing this. I'm going to recreate that exact same video and it doesn't work.
Balance of inspiration versus imitation.
Yeah, and it's also like, why would someone want to watch the exact same thing twice? Or why would someone want to follow someone they already basically follow? So as soon as I found my niche and found what people were interested in, it was a lot easier to sort of wean out the comparison aspect. But don't get me wrong, there's still definitely days where I like go on someone's Instagram and I'm like, oh, I want to be that or I want to do that.
In terms of like having a bio about yourself or like three words to describe yourself that goes out to brands or people, you know, looking for Lewis, I'm that channel. What do I get here? What am I?
Oh, I usually say, I know you said brands, but I mean, I wouldn't say this to a brand, but if someone like just was like, oh, what's your channel? Because I do vlogs, I do makeup, I do fashion, I do reviews, I do reacting. Like, it's not really one specific thing. We go down a route of a hot mess, a human version of a headache, many comments. I usually like, it is stuff that people have commented before and I'm like, yeah, that's quite funny. I'll stick that to me. But I guess sort of, I don't know. My Instagram bio is so boring. It says something like YouTuber, contact, blah-de-blah, London. Like, woo, gosh, that is getting me excited.
If you had to give up one of your social platforms, what would it be and why? Which would be the first to go? Ooh. Get cutthroat?
I think, and it's because I still occasionally use it, Snapchat. And I think everyone else has sort of given up, but because I still have like a lot of friends on it and stuff, and I still post quite a bit on my story, but it would definitely be the easiest one to maybe wean out. But I wouldn't want to, but it would be the easiest one too, I think.
I have heard that they're onboarding more users again, though, and there's actually been a bit of a resurgence there. What are your predictions for the influencer marketplace?
Gosh, I don't even know what I'm having for dinner tonight.
What would you like to see? What do you think is going to happen and what would you like to see?
I would like to hope that it doesn't go anywhere so I have a career to have. But I genuinely think that it will be around for some time. It's been around for 14 years. And I think for about 7 of those 14 years, people have been saying, oh, well, what happens when it fades away? What happens if it fades away? And it's literally only gotten bigger. So, I mean, I would like to keep my fingers crossed that it's still going to go up, so I will still have a job in 10 years. And yeah, I think we'll see a lot more digital talent transferring through to traditional media. And I hope that it just remains a happy place, positive vibes.
A big thanks to Lewis for coming on the show. You've been listening to Blogosphere, Serious Influence, with me, Alice Audley. Join us next week for a brand new episode. Until then, be sure to check out blogosphere magazine.com for more influencer industry updates.
And why not invest in a subscription to our essential magazine whilst you're there?